I'd be there with you. I'd kill your backs.
I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order and let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:35 p.m. on Friday, March 15th, 2019. Present today, we have Representative Knopp, Representative Tilton, Vice Chair Johnston, Co-Chair Wilson, Representative Ortiz, Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Josephson, Representative Merrick, and also Representative Carpenter, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And as we start, just a reminder, folks could please mute their cell phones. And today the committee will hear the budget overview for the Department of Transportation, and I'd like to invite the OMB Director, OMB Budget Director, Lacey Sanders, and Administrative Services Director, Ann Zinger, to the table. And if you could both put yourselves on the record and go ahead and proceed.
Good afternoon, everybody. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders, Budget Director for the Office of Management and Budget, and I actually have Amanda Holland here with me to speak. She is our Management Director, but will be speaking to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities budget today.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Amanda Holland. I'm a Management Director for the Office of Management and Budget. This first slide shows the fiscal year 2019 management plan operating budget for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities as compared to the fiscal year 2020 governor's amended budget from February 13th. The difference between the two budgets is a $57,200,800 unrestricted general fund reduction and a $38,849,500 designated general fund reduction for a total general fund reduction of $96,050,300. In fiscal year 2019 management plan, the total operating budget was $593,349,600. And in the 2020 governor's amended budget, it is $533,126,500. We do show some fund changes throughout the operating budget for 2020. In the other fund category, there is an overall increase of $36,352,300. That is a result of a $42 million request for interagency receipts. This would be authority to receive funds from other agencies for the newly established Division of Facilities Services. This is a consolidation of facilities maintenance across the enterprise. This is offset by some reduction in unrealizable receipts in the other fund category. In the federal fund category, we have a reduction of $525,100. That is a result of some unrealizable federal receipts and the depletion of the last bit of ADAC Airport Operation Fund, which was the fund that was provided to the state by the federal government several years ago when we first took over operations for the ADAC Airport.
A question, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What would be the reason for the $525,000 figure to be unreceivable from the federal level at this point?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, we in the operating budget, we do have some authority to receive federal reimbursement primarily from the Transportation Safety Association, the TSA, for our rural airports, and we're not receiving. For instance, the federal government no longer provides as much monetary support for law enforcement officials at those rural airports. So even though we have the authority in the budget, the federal government is not providing that funding anymore.
Thank you.
On position comparisons, we do have some slight movement between the two budgets. This reflects positions that are moving out of the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities into the Office of Information Technology and the Department of Administration, as well as some positions moving into the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities as part of that consolidation of facility services.
Got a question, Representative Ortiz?
In relationship to positions within the Department of Transportation, if the governor's proposal would go forward towards the Alaska Marine Highway System, which would, in essence, shut it down at the end of September, where are the positions that would result from that to be found? That would the reduction in those positions, where is that seen?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, we are not deleting any positions in the operating budget for the Marine Highway System. Those positions are funded for 3 months, 6 months, or a full year, depending on the work that is available. So we need all of those positions in order to be able to honor the summer schedule.
Okay. I understand. Thank you. Continue.
So effectively, positions will be gone, but because part of the year they're still there, that's why you're including them. But eventually they will be gone according to this budget. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, so when we budget the positions, those positions can be budgeted for 2 months, 6 months, 8 months, 12 months, depending on the work and the funding that is available. So those, the PCNs, the position control number, that's a unique identifier for each position, it will actually stay on in the budget on our books for the entire fiscal year because we do have work for that, for each position in at least part of the fiscal year. Does that make sense?
Yes. Other questions? Please continue.
This slide represents some of our highlights in the budget changes for fiscal year 2020. First is the Alaska Marine Highway System transition. This is an overall reduction in the budget of general fund, combined general fund of $97,988,800. Split out, that is $64,179,700 of unrestricted general fund and $33,809,100 of designated general fund. This includes administration and support work for the Marine Highway System as well as the operations of the Marine Highway System.
Representative Ortiz.
So does this reduction in the DGF reflect, again, if the Marine Highway System shuts down at the end of September, aren't there DGF receipts that come in from ticket sales and from other sources that will no longer be coming in? In other words, aren't there DGF funds that will no longer be coming to the state if, in fact, the system shuts down?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that is correct. So when we look at the, we look at our operating week, so we look at the operations through the end of September, and we know based on past years, we project how much revenue we would receive during those operating weeks. And so the designated general fund that remains in the 2020 governor's amended budget would allow for us to accept all of the revenue that would come in during our weeks of operation.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Johnston.
Thank you, Chair. How much in federal receipts will we not be receiving with these cuts? Do we know? Or is there any federal funding?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, the department will be using all of its federal funding that it would receive in the fiscal year. We would not lose any federal funding through this Marine Highway transition.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how much funding, federal funding, did we lose when we decided to build our ferry system in state versus going out through the process of an RFP? It's my understanding that federal funds were available if we went through the process, but that they weren't available if we decided to basically sole source.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I am not familiar enough with the capital budget side of the Marine Highway System to answer that question with absolute conviction, so I'd like to get back to the committee and provide that information.
Fine, and follow up?
Follow up.
I know you haven't gotten into this point, but we'd like to jump ahead anyway. Do you know why in 1992 we had 61.4% fare box recovery versus 2018 at 33.3%? Do we know why such a drop? Or maybe the cost went up and the ticket price, but what was the difference?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I don't have the history to know exactly what happened in the system in 1992 to give us that spike. That was where we had our highest ridership, about 450,000 passengers. In FY18, we had right around 250,000 passengers. So there was a large uptick in passenger ridership in 1992. We did have a real switch in our fare box recovery rate in about 2004 to 2006. At that time, that's when the fast vehicle ferries came online. And the original plan was to then divest some other ferries so we would maintain approximately a 9-vessel fleet. I don't know why, but those vessels were kept operating. We did not actually divest any vessels when those fast ferries came online. And so as a result, we moved up to an 11-ferry fleet, and that increased our operating costs throughout the next several years.
Any other follow-up?
Follow-up.
So has the department looked at, just from what you just said, if we had, you know, if we utilized what we have in a different fashion, is there a way to get closer to the 61% that we have and still be able to, I mean, maybe you can't be to all the places as often as people might like, but that beats not being there at all?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the department has really been focused on maximizing service. That has been the direction for the department for the last 5 or 6 years. Certainly it's willing to look at other alternatives at this point in terms of what happens if we were to maximize revenue or to look for a little different balance between service and revenue. And part of what we believe the qualified Marine consultant will be able to provide are some very viable options for how to provide a good balance of service and revenue generation.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I ask everyone to indulge me. This is my seventh year in the legislature, but I haven't sat on the Transportation Committee or the subcommittee. And I guess just from media accounts, is the plan to not necessarily sell the fleet, but to try to operate, essentially to turn it over to a private operation? Is that the plan?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, right now what the department wants to do is identify what are the ways that we can realize reductions in the state's financial liability and obligations. And so the door is open, if you will, to look at several different options. One could be privatization, one could be private-public partnership, one could be a refining service. There are several different options. We recently put out an informal request for proposal for the consultant, and we included in that proposal 9 or 10 possibilities that we saw as potential options for transitioning the Alaska Marine Highway System to a more sustainable system.
How many consultants applied? I know the proposal deadline was 4 days ago, and I'm wondering if you could give us an update on that.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, we had one bidder who submitted a proposal, and that is currently being evaluated to determine whether or not it meets the criteria and requirements of the procurement process.
Okay. I guess I'm just wondering if it makes more sense, not in terms of necessarily the administration's budget, but to look at this in year two of the administration, given that we have to make a decision imminently and we don't know what our options are. Can you help me with that?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, our concept is by getting the report from the consultant, we will have some Options that conceivably we could begin to implement as soon as we receive those recommendations and get overall approval for taking the implementation plan forward. We believe there is activity that could occur possibly as early as this fiscal year, but we are looking at a full implementation to begin next fiscal year. I can certainly take your question and comments back to the administration to see if there's interest in altering that timeline. At this point, that is our timeline.
Thank you.
Representative Knott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And like Representative Josephson, I have no experience or background with Marine Highways Transportation, but I'm wondering, as you're well aware, we receive a lot of federal dollars for transportation purposes, and I know that in municipal-owned airports, when we receive them federal dollars, they come with the strings attached, meaning we don't get to arbitrarily close them without having a liability to the federal government. So does that same thing apply to the Alaska Marine Highway System, and if so, do you know what our liabilities would be in regards to federal government, federal receipts, anything like that you help me with?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Knopp, I just happen to have a little information on that. All of the federal funding for the Alaska Marine Highway System was received from the Federal Highway Administration, and the Federal Highway Administration does have a different payback policy for the Marine Highway System if you were to compare it to the Federal Aviation Administration's payback. If we were to calculate the state's responsibility when we're disposing of a federal highway-funded ferry vessel asset, first we would have to calculate that federal share. How much does the state owe back to the federal government? So the Federal Highway Administration established the following procedure. And the costs that were expended on the vessel are identified by year in three categories: federal, state match, and other state funds. These are converted to the year of sale using an inflation rate. Then the sum of each category of year and current year value are totaled. The federal share is the fraction of federal funds divided by total funds, and it's expressed as a percentage. Then we have an example of the motor vessel Taku, which was recently divested. So first we had the expenditures with no inflation. Then we did the conversion to the 2016 dollars, which was the year that we planned to dispose of the vessel. And the federal share percentage at that point was calculated to be 63.9%. So the percentage is going to be different for every vessel, depending on how much federal money was invested in the vessel and how long ago we last invested that federal funds into the vessel. So Taku, again, 63.9%. Then we looked at how much we were going to receive for the vessel. So we used statutory state disposal methodology, and we said this is how much that vessel was going to sell for. Once it was sold, for the Taku, for example, once it was sold, we had a gross sale price of $4 million. The cost of the sale itself was $550,000, so our net receipt for the Taku was $3,450,000. Then we took that 63.9% of federal funds, and we subtracted that. So that's $2,204,550. The remainder of the $1.2 million is state funding. That federal funding, that 63.9% that was the payback, we don't write a check that goes back to the Federal Highway Administration. Instead, we then take that $2.2 million and it has to be applied to another Alaska federal aid project. So it could be applied as match for another project. It actually can qualify as state match. It's a great deal for the state, honestly. Or it can be applied to another federal capital project, road, bridge, anything it needs to be.
And that was great information, great formula, a little over my head, but I understood the concept. So in a summary, have we done the full analysis on the entire system, not just one particular ship, but if we're going to say, if the system goes away, hypothetically, has the department done a complete analysis, and do you know, not in percent, but mm-hmm. in dollars, like this mm-hmm. final number you just gave me, do you have any idea where we would be at as far as a tax?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, we have not done a complete analysis yet, primarily because we are waiting to see what options the consultant will provide, because that could really change things up. It may be divesting one or two assets, or it may be divesting all assets. All of our assets combined for the Alaska Marine Highway System is approximately $1.1 billion.
Mm-hmm. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the formula that you spoke of, just to be clear, you were saying that this is not money that we'd be obligated to pay back to the federal government. It would be money that we could use in other areas. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that is correct. They have to be for other federal aid projects, so other Federal Highway Administration funded projects, but we would in fact be able to reuse that money instead of paying it back to the federal government.
And would that also be true about the terminals that were the federal monies that were used to build the terminals for the ferry system? Would the same thing be true?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, it is not the same for facilities. So the terminals, the docks, those are facilities, and they have a different federal payback process, and unfortunately that one I am not well versed in, so if I can get back to the committee on what that process is, but I don't know it here today.
Would you follow up? Would you know it enough to be able to say whether it's going to be a net positive or a net negative on the state in terms of its obligation to the federal government? Because the other ones, you seem to make it think like it was going to be a positive thing, because we're not going to have to pay this money back. We're going to be able to use another project, so that's a good thing. Would the same be true for the formula as you know it so far in relationship to our facilities or our terminals, things like that?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I don't know very much about it. I hesitate to provide detail. My area of knowledge lies more in the operating budget than the capital budget. I do know that land-based facilities or assets that are funded by the Federal Highway Administration have a different payback process. I do not know the details of that process.
Follow up? Do you know if there's anybody within the entire department of the Department of Transportation who has done that analysis? Do you know the answer to that question?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I know that we have several engineers and transportation planners who have looked at what that would be. I know that they are working with the Federal Highway Administration to better understand what that process would look like. We focused on the vessels first, and we just got the information on the vessel process in the last week, and so now they're looking at the facilities information next.
Follow up? So we just got that other information in the last week,
mm-hmm.
yet we made the plan to go ahead and, for lack of a better word, shut down the system here at the end of September without that information, because that plan has been out there before us for a long time now, for the last several months at least. We don't know about the whole ferry terminal facilities situation, yet we've gone forward with a plan. Aren't we, as Representative Josephson just mentioned, kind of putting the cart before the horse here in some big ways, which could put us into some, like we're asked to make decisions about this particular proposal through our budgeting process without knowing really anything about the liability potential for the state in a lot of these different areas. Would you agree with that?
And Representative Ortiz, I just wanted to pull up Ms. Soroki, who could also help to answer some of these questions that may be tying more possibly going beyond some of the numbers here. Ms. Soroki, if you could put yourself on the record.
Through the chair, my name is Mary Soroki, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And unfortunately, we have not had time to brief OMB. We just were told this morning at one of our staff meetings that the process for facilities is basically the same as for the vessels. So we had our staff working first on the ferries, and they had indicated that they thought it was going to be different for facilities, but when they really went through the calculations and did the analysis, it's pretty much the same. Whatever money we take in, that percentage that is federally assigned to it by those kind of calculations is ours to spend as match or as part of a federal aid project.
Representative Ortiz.
How do you say your last name again?
Soroki.
Soroki, thank you for being here. Appreciate that and added information. We spoke about money that we would take in. What about the historical, the investments that were made by the federal government to, for example, put into place those facilities, those buildings in the past, the terminals in the past? What about that? Is there any obligation to pay those monies back to the federal government?
We would do the similar sort of calculation. We would calculate what the value is, what we've spent, do the net present value calculation, determine what we can sell it for. The net present value calculation will lead us to the percentage that is federal and is state for the construction of those facilities back through time. And then that percentage would be applied to our sales price, and the percentage that was state funds would go into the general fund. The percentage that is federal funds would go back to the state to be used for federal aid projects.
Please continue.
The proposed FY 2020 amended budget would switch the operating weeks. In FY 19, the operating weeks for the Marine Highway System was 345.9 weeks. It would reduce down to 84.8 weeks. That allows the Marine Highway System to honor its published schedule. The Marine Highway System publishes its schedule through September, and then late in the year, usually June, July, it would begin to publish the next schedule. So schedules only come out for about 5 to 6 months at a time. We did have a governor's directive, and in that directive it was to for the department to identify potential reductions to the state's financial obligation and liability as related to the Marine Highway System. The report from the consultant, when that consultant is brought on board, is currently due on August 1st of 2019, and that report will include the information that was in several other reports. So through the years, we have had a number of reports about the Marine Highway System. None of them are doing what this particular report is going to do, which is to take a hard look at how could the Marine Highway System transition to a more sustainable and affordable system. But some examples of some of the reports that this consultant will reference, as well as in new information they'll gather, include a 2012 systems analysis, a 2015 tariff analysis, a 2016 economic impact analysis. There are phase one and two Alaska Marine Highway reform reports from 2017, numerous annual traffic volume reports, annual financial reports, and various vessel condition reports. So there is a lot of information available, but we still have new information to gather and compile and synthesize. What we provide below are some, oh, sorry.
Representative Ortiz.
Going back to the topic then of the consultant, Representative Josephson asked the question, but I just, again, for my own clarification, the deadline for proposals for that consultant, the RFPP, the deadline for those proposals was March 11th, is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that is correct.
And there was only one submission of a of a vendor, for lack of a better vendor, mm-hmm. to put a bid on that particular job?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that is correct.
And how long was the request for proposals out there? How long was that out there?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the informal request for proposal was issued on March 1st.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, through the chair. Not to be sarcastic, but I just want to make sure I understand. We've had a ferry system almost since statehood. We have a report that may not come until, theoretically, I'm home in my hometown, and a budget had been due by June 30th. And the administration wants me to vote on whether to defund something before I have a report that describes what a replacement operation might look like. Is that what I'm being asked to do?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the administration has asked the department to look at various options. There is an option on the table right now in this budget, which is to have no more service starting in October 1st for this year. That would be the plan going forward. When the consultant's report is received, that would indicate future plans for FY 2021 and beyond.
Follow up. And would there be some, so in the window of time between roughly October 1, 2019 and 2020-2021, there would be no service until some new proposal was taken up and moved on?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the Alaska Marine Highway System would not provide service. I can't speak for whether or not private operators would provide service in its stead.
Thank you.
Representative Carpenter?
Never mind. She just answered my question.
Representative Johnston?
And I'm sorry, I'm not intimately familiar with this budget, but do you have dry dock and all the elements of storing the ferries in the budget?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, yes, the 2020 budget and the plan that we have proposed with the sailings to end October 1st does account for any layup that's required of those vessels. So we will continue to care and protect those assets even if they are not running.
Thank you.
Let's continue.
Another change in our FY 2020 governor's amended budget from February 13th is a $46,900 general fund reduction in the rural airports. We do have 237 rural airports that are owned and operated by the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. This does include some seaplane bases. The governor issued a directive on February 13th for the department to analyze options for reducing the state's financial obligation and liability as it relates to rural airports, while also considering the importance of air travel for many rural communities. And so the department is establishing a formal divestment process. The total operating costs for the rural airport system in fiscal year 2018 was $35,600,000. And the total revenues in fiscal year 2018 for the rural airport system was $10.9 million. That's airport leasing receipts, $6.3 million. And then also there was aviation fuel tax of $4.5 million to equal that $10.9.
Ms. Holland, we had a question on this one. I was looking at the breakdown of the $46,900. I think for the northern region, it was something like 17,000 is how much could be saved in the northern region. And there was a list in subcommittee that had at least 17 airports, I believe. And so that would mean that on average, $1,000 or less was being spent at some of those airports. What kinds of things happen at those airports? Is it that maybe there's just an assessment once a year where somebody goes out and looks at them and that's what costs $1,000, or is it that some, you know, cutting back of brush is occurring, or is it that maybe all the $17,000 is being spent maybe on one airport and nothing on the other 16, and then it's just kind of rotates? Like, can you tell me a little bit about what the $17,000 is being spent on?
So, Mr. Chair, the airports cost, they all have varying costs. Our most expensive airports to operate typically are the Part 139 airports. Those are airports that have jet service. And so because they have jet service, the Federal Aviation Administration has higher requirements for operation. We have to have qualified firefighters, for example, and we have to have certain lighting and length of runway and everything. I'm not going to claim to be an aviation expert, so I won't go beyond what I know. Some of our other airports, we do have a few airports that are even classified as backcountry airports, so we don't actually do active maintenance on them, and pilots would use those airports at their own risk. They know they're there. Department of Natural Resources has several backcountry airports as well. We do have a few airports where they're on the road system, and so the only maintenance that would be required would be for one of our equipment operators who are caring for the road to actually take a left, swipe the runway, and then go back out on the road for if they're doing snow or ice management. So the cost would, what we would do with that $17,000 reduction is look at the conditions of the airports and figure out where can we absorb that reduction that has the least impact on the ability for air runways to be operable.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I know you don't, I don't see it in here, but can you tell me why we're replacing $3,761,000 of vehicle rental tax with unrestricted general funds?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, each year the appropriations of vehicle rental taxes equals actual revenue collections in the previously closed fiscal year. And the governor directed the Office of Management and Budget to include a capital appropriation of 70% of the available vehicle rental taxes to the Alaska Travel Industry Association as a named recipient grant. This required replacement of the vehicle rental taxes existing within three departments, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, as well as the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. And this is to allow them to maintain the level of services provided.
Follow-up? Do we know what the percentage was last year that we used out of the same fund for the travel industry?
For the record, Lacey Sanders, just so there's clarification on who's talking. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the entire available amount went to, was distributed through to those three agencies. So there was not a specific allocation to a named recipient grant.
Follow up.
So we just, so there was just a certain amount that went out to the travel industry last year, but it was just general funds. It was not out of the vehicle rental tax.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I'm going off my memory, but yes, it was pure general funds in the prior year.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up.
So also we're replacing motor fuel tax of $1,232,000 with unrestricted general funds. Did people just not use as much gasoline? I mean, where's the shortfall there?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the Department of Revenue every year does its best to project what how the total amount of motor fuel tax that will be collected, and the motor fuel tax collection rate is not as high as it, as was projected to be, which is why we are asking for unrestricted general fund instead. Certainly, there has been an increase in energy efficiency. We have more fuel efficient cars that can go longer, and we have seen an uptick in the state in the use of electric cars. So we believe that is some of the impact of collecting less motor fuel tax than projected.
Follow up.
So could you tell me what the 2018 actuals were for here and then what your projection was? I'll just be curious whether or not our projection was anything close to what we actually had the year before.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I would have to get back to the committee with that information.
And one last group.
Representative Wilson.
So we're also replacing airport leasing receipts with UGF, which was $1,985,000. That's also going to go into unrestricted general funds. What happened there?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we do have some unrealizable receipts in our airport leasing receipts, and that is primarily due to the downturn in the Dead Horse area. The leasing receipts in Dead Horse have gone down significantly, as well as a downturn overall in the oil industry that does impact our the amount of money that we bring in through airport leasing receipts.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson?
I have to make Representative Guerra happy because this is what he would ask. So, which is just sad. So on Dead Horse, you're the one that brought it up. So how close to the revenue that we charge for that particular airport, what is the difference between the revenue brought in to how much it costs to actually maintain that airport?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, give me just a moment, and I can give that for to you.
It was always his favorite subject.
Okay, so through the chair, Representative Wilson, this is fiscal year 18, and for Dead Horse, the operating costs in fiscal year 18 was $2,647,000, and the annual revenue was $2,250,000.
And follow up?
Followers.
So if you wanted to change the fees to more closely take care of the costs, can you do that just through regulation? Does it have to go through statute? Besides, we know it upsets people when you try to do that. I'm just curious, for, you know, on this particular one, because it's kind of driven by a certain industry versus a lot of our other small airports, is because that's the only way residents can get in and out.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the department in regulation does have the authority to have landing fees. The department historically has worked with communities regarding landing fees. There is significant pushback from carriers and communities when the department has entertained the idea of possibly instituting landing fees. But we do have a success story. Just recently, the community of Sandpoint wanted to become a Part 139 jet service airport. And the carrier that's going into that area, as well as the community itself, requested landing fees to help cover the increased cost of maintenance by upgrading that airport to be a Part 139. So we do have some success stories where we are able to maintain a sustainable and affordable airport service by working with the communities.
That's good to know. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Representative Josephson?
Thank you. Through the chair. The vehicle rental tax, I'm remembering a former state representative, Jason Grand, working on a bill to fix the travel industry's lack of revenue or assistance from the state. At one point, they'd received nearly, I think, $20 million. It had fallen way, way down. And this rental tax, if my memory serves me, had originally been designed to be used by them, but had been sort of captured by some of these departments. And so my first, and I may have my facts wrong, but this is the best I can come up with at the moment. My first question for you is, will this revenue shift largely cure the travel industry's problem? Do we know? We're moving some vehicle rental tax from DOT to ATIA. Am I right about that?
Mm-hmm. For the record, Lacey Sanders, Budget Director, Office of Management and Budget. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, there is a long history with the tourism industry and the vehicle rental tax collections. The vehicle rental tax collections are designated in statute for the purpose of, memory again here, for tourism, marketing, and economic development. There was a decision several years ago to distribute that funding throughout highways mm-hmm. in the Department of Transportation, mm-hmm. to parks in Department of Natural Resources, and a portion of that funding to the Department of Commerce as they do economic development. Over the years, there has been some funding level that has gone to either the Alaska Tourism Marketing through a named recipient grant, and also as tourism was managed in the Department of Commerce and Community Economic Development. The request in the capital budget appropriate 70% of what was collected in the prior closed fiscal year. That estimate of 70% was based on a few economic studies that had been completed. One was by the McDowell Group, identifying the use of that funding as being available for tourism marketing. I do want to state that this funding is a tax. It is essentially unrestricted general funds, however, has been designated in statute for a purpose. The legislature does have the ability to spend this funding as they see fit. It could be spent on anything from, a fish study to tourism, depending on the will of the legislature. The proposal in front of you is to follow that allocation of 70%, therefore required backfill, so to speak, of general funds in the remaining departments, so that the same level of service could continue moving forward for those departments.
Okay, follow up? I mean, I maybe I'm stating the obvious, but I assume that the tourism industry is delighted and feels protected and no longer needs legislation. Do we know that?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I can't speak on behalf of the tourism industry. I have in interactions in prior years with them, they do feel that this funding being collected should go to their entity, but again, it's subject to legislative appropriation, and this may fill the need that they have. I do know that their requests have varied from year to year. I remember as well the $20 million request as well as $16 million funding level in prior years. So they may be back before the legislature asking for additional funding. I can't speak to that, what they would do.
Mr. Chair, just some sort of scattershot follow-up questions, if I might. On the rural airports, are there any safety considerations associated with closing these airports?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, safety is definitely one of the first things that we consider when identifying potential airports for closure or divestment or reclassification to backcountry. And so the first thing that the department is looking at is the Federal Aviation Administration's purpose and need. So we first look, is this an essential service airport, or is this an airport that potentially no longer provides an essential service? For example, our Part 139, our jet service airports are not included in this review of potential divestment or reclassification. They are serving an essential need and purpose as defined by the Federal Aviation Administration. But we also look at some other things in this review, and that's part of why we're setting up this formal process. We look at the proximity of alternatives. Are there other airports that might be close by? For example, something we might consider is Ugashik. It has 12 residents in the community. The annual maintenance contract cost is $4,800. There is an alternate airport available 1/2 mile away from the DOT airport. So there's a private-owned airport that is open to the public, and the owners of that airport have indicated willingness to work with the department. And so the question becomes, is it a smart use of state funds to maintain an airport that is 1/2 mile away from another airport that the community can still use? So there are a lot of different things that we're going to look at, but that would be one of them. Another one could be population. We may have an airport that has no official population. We have 5 airports, in fact, that have the community has no official population. So we're going to be looking at those to say, is it an airport we still need to maintain? There's one we know for sure we need to maintain. Dead Horse, by census, has 0 population, but it is a very important part of the Alaska economy, and so we would not consider Dead Horse as a viable candidate potentially for divestment or reclassification because of the factors surrounding the economic development. Safety is a number one concern for ours, and the Federal Aviation Administration has very strict and clear safety requirements, and so absolutely one of our top priorities is to ensure that the airports we are responsible for are safe.
Okay. Follow up?
While we're on this subject, I just wanted to clarify, asked in subcommittee, when you say the airport would be closed, it would just mean that there's no longer service being provided there in terms of snow removal or whatnot, but the airport would still be open in the sense that you're not going to put up barriers on the runway. And so, for example, there are three airports that I use along a route that I typically fly by that I use as possible emergency landing spots. And so those wouldn't be totally closed, correct? Like they wouldn't be barricaded off.
Correct, Mr. Chair. They would still technically be open. They would not receive any care and feeding, so to speak.
Representative Josephson?
Yes, just a couple other questions, if I might, Mr. Chairman. Back on the question of the ferry, one of the purposes for the Juneau Access Road was to provide a ferry terminal closer to Skagway or Haines, and I'm wondering if we don't have a ferry system, does that, in your mind, impact, and maybe it's not in your purview, but should that impact the legislature's consideration of the Juneau Access Road in some way?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I'm not really in the role to make policy decisions for the department concerning what projects they might take on. We could look at the transportation improvement plan, the state transportation improvement plan, and see if it's in there. But I can't speak for them in terms of the policy decision.
And if I might, one last question. At the outset of today's hearing, you talked about $42 million of interagency receipts for highways, aviation, and facilities. You mentioned a new consolidated division of facility services. And I'm just curious, where are those funds coming from exactly?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson. Those funds, that is authority that would allow the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to accept interagency receipts from the clients that they have, which are the other state agencies. So, for example, and the court system. Currently, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities provides facility maintenance for some buildings in the court system, and then through the interagency receipt authority, the department can then receive funds to pay for that facility maintenance work that it performs.
And is that reflected in the other side of the ledger? In other words, is this just a, are these funds currently going through IAs, or is this $42 million new dollars that these other departments have to raise?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson. So as the Division of Facility Services is established, it was established in fiscal year 2018, and it started just with the Department of Transportation facilities. Now it's added in some Department of Admin facilities, some Department of Education Early Development facilities. More departments are coming online every fiscal year, and they already have their authority and funding for their care and maintenance of facilities. All this $40 million does is allows the Department of Transportation to have those funds transferred to DOT when it provides the service. So the actual money, so to speak, is already in the agencies for the work that they're currently doing for facilities. But when we consolidate in the Division of Facility Services, we then need to have DOT have the authority to accept that money.
Thank you.
Representative Ortiz?
No.
Representative Johnston?
Yes, thank you through the chair, and I'm sure this is something you're going to have to get me at a later date, but is there any way to compare the cost of maintaining those facilities, like the most recent ones from the Department of Administration, and your projected cost as DOT? Could we get a history and then just to the future?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, yes, I will definitely get that information back to the committee.
Thank you.
I wonder if we can also get more detail on exactly what the $46,000 on the rural airports here gets us. And I guess the question goes to if some of it's actually work, like clearing back brush or fixing grading or whatnot. But the reason I want to drill down on this one more is how much of that is somebody just driving, 50 miles down the road to an airport to see if it's to assess the condition of it, and whether or not we might want to look at just putting maybe some money in there instead of making a full cut here, putting some money in just so that that can continue to happen, because maybe in 10 years from now the airport's gotten to a point where it really does need some work, but we won't know that unless somebody's checking up on it every 2 or 3 years or something. And if we totally abandon it, then it could get to a point where it's a real hazard, and folks who may want to use it for an emergency and they try to land there, now it's really going to be an emergency because there is a big gaping hole in the middle of the runway or something. And so I'm just curious to see whether or not we could get maybe some more detail on that and find out, what maybe come up with some kind of a plan on whether assessments like that could be done, every year, every couple of years, how much that would cost. So any further questions, Representative Wilson?
Since we seem to be very curious today, so do you by any chance, and you might have to look at it, so the fuel tax that we currently pay, and I don't know whether you would make the comparison to our, fixing the roads versus our capital projects, but I know as we compare the ferry system with the amount of revenue it brings in to how much it's necessary, I can't remember last time we looked at the fuel tax that we utilize and how that compares to the maintenance that we need on the roads that we normally don't get federal dollars to, compared to the matching dollars that we have. I just think if we're going to compare one system of transportation and use user fees for that, out of fairness, we should probably do the same thing on the user fees when we talk about our highways. So I don't know if you've ever looked at that, to whether we would compare just to maintenance versus, the money that we need for our matching funds. But I would like to at least know on the maintenance part of it, as our roads are getting older, we haven't changed our fuel tax in a long time. Are we getting behind on our maintenance because we've kept that fee to a certain point? But I guess I'm just trying to look as close to apples mm-hmm. as the comparison you did for the Marine Highway, of how those same numbers and the fuel tax goes as far as taking care of the maintenance that we have on our highways as well. So I'll leave that to you, what makes sense on the numbers, but I think that's another conversation we're going to need to have as our roads keep getting older and older.
Further comments on the presentation?
Representative Foster, if I might.
Ms. Sanders?
Thank you. To Representative Wilson's question on the vehicle rental taxes that were paid to the Alaska tourism industry last year, if I can follow up, I believe my memory is kind of triggered that there might be a little bit of funding that went from vehicle rental tax. I want to follow up with you if that's okay, or with the committee, to just double check and verify what the information I gave was accurate. Yep.
Anything further? Committee comments? Okay, seeing none. Thank you very much for your presentation, and that should be all the presentations we have for today. And so with that, if there's nothing else to come before the committee, our next meeting is scheduled for Monday, March 18th at 1:30 p.m. And at that meeting, the Alaska Municipal League will be here to provide a budget discussion. So with that, we will be adjourned at 2:33 p.m. Thank you.